And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 695. We're talking more BABIP this week, but guys that finished high on the BABIP list, some really, really impressive names that most people will know. Unlike last week, we're kind of picking and choosing some big names. These are all big names, and now we got to start thinking, is this who they are? Is the regression coming? What was the factors? So on and so forth to get us ready for more digging in on the 2025 season. But before we get to that, make sure you follow me on Twitter at BDentric and my co-host on the early editions every single week on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Ted, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing well, Bubba. Could be better if the Yankees are doing better, but got a big game four ahead of us, and I wore my Judge shirt to try to get him out of his funk. I doubt it's going to work the way he's swinging the bat, but like I said to you before, it's good to have fantasy baseball take my mind off real baseball for a little bit.
And, yeah, for sure.
Hopefully it's a good night.
Yeah, I think you guys get one. Dodgers are
gonna be tonight. It's the bullpen game.
Yeah, the bullpen game, exactly. This is the one you got to get, but it's the common sense thing. And Judge has to hit the darn baseball. That's just the way it goes. And right now, I think a lot of it's between his ears. A lot of it. So that's a tough one to scramble in a short amount of time. Is the tricky part. But we'll see when an Alex Verdugo can pimp a 2-run homer that's only out in 4 ballparks. That's always a good way to get the team going. In the 19th, so we'll see. But I think you got one tonight. We'll see where it goes after that, because then it's Cole versus Flaherty tomorrow night, I believe, Wednesday night. And you never know. Anything's possible. Take it back to L.A., have some fun, but we'll wait and see on that one. All right, last week we talked low BABIP, as I mentioned. We're talking 400 plate appearances or more, and we kind of picked and choose through some certain names, some guys that many have heard from before, some that many haven't, you know, Santander. Benintendi showed up again, Josh Naylor, Marcus Semien, and Corbin Carroll, many others that stood out as kind of like, huh, these are some big names that had either disappointing years, and maybe this is the reason why, or like Josh Naylor had a really good year. It's like with all the power, but still a low BABIP, blah, blah, blah. All those kind of discussion points there. Today, we're going to highlight the guys at the other end of the spectrum, some of the elite BABIP players from 2024. And before we get into that, some people are just BABIP prone. Like, that's who they are. There's very good BABIP hitters, hit for average, so on and so forth. Some guys have great years, and you look at that little BABIP column and you go, that looks interesting. So that's the point of this discussion. And so we'll start out with it. The number one, the highest BABIP on the season player we have talked about on this show. I talked about him last week on the Outfield Preview 1 with Ryan Bloomfield and Bubba the Bloom. Seiya Suzuki, BABIP of 370 on the season, leads the way. Dude hit 283 on the season, Ben. 21 home runs, 16 steals, almost outside of the stolen bases, a copy of his previous season. Because the BABIP was much higher than the previous season. So when you dig in on Seiya Suzuki, it was a tale of two halves of the season. But in the end, the final stat line, reminiscent, minus that BABIP, much, much different. How are you digging in on this change of BABIP potentially?
Definitely helped him out. I mean, of course, a high BABIP is going to help anybody out, but for Suzuki, especially because his K rate rose by 5 percentage points. That's one thing that I noticed looking at the underlying numbers over year from 2023 to last year, or I should say this year is 2024 still. And at the same time, so I'm going to do like kind of the same process I did last week with the unlucky ones, so to speak. And it's just go through like the XBA, the batted ball quality, hard hit rate, all those things. And Seiya's XBA stands out, at least among the hitters that we have to discuss tonight. And his XBA was 258. So not quite 30 points below his actual average. But when you see the high elevated K rate, which was 27%, which is not very good. It's not awful, but it's definitely not ideal. The BABIP definitely helped him have that same season, like you were saying, that he's kind of had last year. It's just like the BABIP went up, the K rate went up, and they kind of ended up with the same result in terms of average. But, I mean, if you ignore that for a second, the hard hit numbers were still great. The ex-Woba was great. Ex-Slug, average ex-Velocity were all pretty good reds on Baseball Savant. Strong sprint speed still, so he's quick enough to beat out those infield hits. And I was big on Seiya this year. I had him a couple teams, maybe three. And so when we look at the K rate, the one thing that I also want to look at is the swing strike rate, more so for pitchers, but even for hitters. And his swing strike rate, Seiya's, was only a point higher than last year, and it was 8.8%. The CSW was a little bit more higher for him. And so maybe he's got unlucky with the strikeouts. I don't know if I would expect him to strike out that high of a rate again. I'm sure he'll probably fall in the middle of the two it was 22% last year, but I think Saya will still be good. Like, he's as steady as it comes, definitely more valuable in a 15 teamer, but hopefully he can break out like we were hoping for this year. He didn't really quite break out, but he just returned value.
Yeah, he had that oblique injury yet again to start the season. It's kind of slowed him down, finished just fine. Very good season in the end. I'd love to see a full season from Saya. I know I'm not alone on that one. The increase in steals was interesting. Has nothing to do with BABIP, of course, but that was, and like, if we start getting 15-plus steals to go with the 20 to 25 home runs, that becomes like very, very interesting with Saya. And then you put a full season together. You guys know how to do math. It could get quite fun. So, yeah, it'll be interesting with the increase. I think he'll still be just fine, as you were saying, all things considered, and I wouldn't read too much into his BABIP, but it was quite the spike. All right, the number two guy, not going to talk about much because he already mentioned his name on the show, and that's Aaron Judge. BABIP of 367, hit 322. I think we know when Judge hits ball hard, ball gets through infield a lot easier, so on and so forth. I guess the crazy part, and I'll mention it'll happen with this next player as well, home runs aren't part of BABIP. So when you hit that many home runs and still have a high BABIP, that is a bit impressive to me with Aaron Judge. The number three player on the BABIP lifts, though, Brent Rooker, 362 BABIP, hit 293 on the season with his 39 home runs. That is back-to-back years of 30-plus home runs. Dude drove in 112 RBIs for the Oakland Athletics. Nonetheless, I want to emphasize the Oakland Athletics. Actually, the Athletics. Sorry, the Athletics. 112 RBIs. So career year in batting average, career pretty much in every category. Not even going to sugarcoat it. Every category for Brent Rooker, including BABIP. So, Ben, when you look at this, we saw a drop in the strikeout rate as well. There was a lot of very, very positive things from Brent Rooker, but is it one of those where you can be like, yeah, I can count on that again?
I mean, there's definitely a chance. His XBA was 269, his average is 293, and the K rate was even worse than Saya's. Rooker had a 28.8% K rate, which when you have struck out that many times, and then he still hits 293. It's pretty impressive, but that's why he's third on the list for BABIP. It's just that whenever he hit the ball, he crushed it. All of his percentiles are very good for like the batted ball quality on Savant. He's not very fast, unlike Saya. Rooker is roughly middle of the pack with sprint speed, 56th percentile. Let's check out his ground ball line. His fly ball rate is very high, 45%. So that's kind of alarming. I don't expect to have or someone to have a high BABIP when you hit that many fly balls. The line drive was 21% for him, so that's pretty good. That'll help for sure. But I would expect Rooker to regress in average, and mainly because I expect his BABIP to come down next season. He can still hit the ball really hard, but he's definitely at the high end of the fortune, and he doesn't really have a baseline in his career to go off of for what his quote unquote baseline BABIP is, but I doubt it's going to stick this high. And for his career, including last year, of course, it's 327. So even if it's 327 and he's striking out that often, maybe he's, I don't know, more like a 250, 240 hitter, which is still okay with the power that he brings. People could see the average and kind of get a little happy to draft him next year. And just be cautious though, because I would expect it to come down a good amount.
I would too, because it's not like he's a heavy ground ball guy. It's pretty much the same profile in that regard, and the ground balls and the fly balls and all that. So he didn't do a big change there. It's just could be as simple as, you know, he found a few more holes here and there. They say something like one or two more hits a month make you a 300 hitter or something like that. It's like little itty bitty things like that can make a huge difference. He played most games of his career. I think he's still going to be very good. Like you said, I'm not going to take it away from him. Like when he regresses, he could be a Kyle Schwarber light, like real easily. Batting average, like you said, 240 to 250. That's what Schwarbaum's did. Might not have the 45 home runs or whatever, but why can't he get 39 last year? And quote unquote, good ballpark he's going to. So, we just put a sticker on every podcast with that on there. Parental advisory, A's in good ballpark. But I think he'll still be very good. But yes, I do expect a little regression back. Now, that's where it gets fun when people start talking 2025. What's that mean for his ADP? Because people are moving him up the boards. He was drafted like round 9, I think, in the too early mock. If we're looking at the 8 drafts that are done so far between 50s and DCs, he's got an ADP of 80 right now, as high as 46, which is pretty wild stuff there, Ben. I can't go that far. ADP of 80, it's an interesting discussion. I'm going to say that much. It's going to be a hard one to take the bite of. But again, if you Schwarber light, 80 is probably pretty good. So, it'll be a fun discussion with Rooker. I think he's going to be very good. It's just a matter of how good will he be, obviously. All right, next on the list here, the fourth BABIP player, Marcell Ozuna, a BABIP of 359. And Ozuna just keeps doing it, man. 33 years old. He's going to be a free agent this season. Well, there's a club option, so probably not going to be a free agent. Let's put it that way. Dude hit 302, 39 homers after 40 home runs last season, back-to-back 100-plus RBI seasons. First time he's hit 300 since the shortened 2020, so first time since 2017 in a full season. Just ridiculous stuff from Ozuna, a guy that's usually closer to like a 300 BABIP. So a big BABIP hike, power still there. So what are we thinking with Marcell Ozuna?
You mentioned the 2017 season. That's also the last time his BABIP was this high in a full season. It was 355 that year. The only other time it was higher was 2020, so we can throw that out. But yeah, he definitely got fortunate with the batted ball quality. But like the other guys we've mentioned so far, Ozuna's Statcast page is pretty elite. So from the WOBA, ex-WOBA down to the launch angle sweet spot, it's all above 92% or higher, 92nd percentile or higher. And that's, I mean, I'm not surprised seeing how, considering how slow he is, only 14 percentile sprint speed. He had 302. And kind of like with Rooker, we didn't mention it, but the utility only kind of kept me away from Ozuna, and also because he seems to be up and down every season for the most part. Of course, he had two good ones in a row finally, but like with Ozuna, I think he's a great hitter still. I don't think he's old enough where he would collapse. I failed to mention this with Rooker as well, but Rooker and Ozuna both have pretty poor contact rates, so they have to crush the ball when they hit it, and they do. Ozuna's K rate was just below 25%, so better than, say, as in Rooker's, but still a little high, but not terrible. You can work with that, definitely. And as long as he keeps crushing the ball like this, Ozuna, he'll be great. And I think most people probably expect the Braves offense to bounce back. And he was this good in a down year for the team. And if everyone like Ozuna, I mean, not Ozuna, if Olsen comes back, Albies comes back, Acuna comes back, and Riley comes back too from his injury, it's kind of crazy saying all those names. Ozuna would, yeah, he could just be as good or if not better, maybe with a lower average, but everything else should be fine, I think.
Yeah, lower average could still get much better counting stats with all those guys showing up. That offense was bad for a long time. So, yeah, I think it's going to be just fine. Should get the option picked up, as mentioned. So, back in Atlanta next year. And you mentioned the util only with Rooker as well. There's a lot of those guys coming in this way. And I think we're starting to change our mindset on how to approach that after what Shohei did this year, after what Ozuna did this year. It's like, maybe we should kind of rearrange our thought process on this whole util only situation. All right, fifth in the BABIP department. I believe we talked about him recently, when Ellie De La Cruz, BABIP of 359, batting average 259. That's the biggest drop by far we've seen from BABIP to average so far. Well, Suzuki was close to 100 points, but this is a big drop off from BABIP to average, which kind of, you know, sounds interesting because he hits the ball that hard, so you can believe the BABIP, but the results are another story. 25 homers, 67 steals, as we mentioned. When you dig in more on Ellie and the BABIP, I know we've talked about the round ball with him, but when he elevates it, it goes a long, long ways. So there's a lot of ways to kind of look into Ellie De La Cruz. I think there's going to be a lot of up and down batting average seasons potentially with Ellie, but maybe he's like a 250 guy. But that big BABIP, if that comes back, then we obviously probably see some ramifications on that one.
For sure. But one thing he has in his favor is that he is the fastest player in baseball. He's 100th percentile sprint speed. So that'll help. And his XBA was 244. So he was even lucky to hit 259 according to that metric. And yeah, I mean, Ellie, his K rate was above 31% last year. He's the first one that we've mentioned to eclipse 30% strikeout rate. His contact rate was only 67.9%, which is very poor. That's overall. Hit the ball pretty hard, 91.8 miles per hour average exit velocity. His barrel rate was very good for how many ground balls he hits. It was 12.7%. But also, it was kind of a nice coincidence. I saw Frank Stample tweet about Ellie. It was from his Statcast page, and it was his expected stats based on pitch type. And Frank said that, I don't know why anyone throws him a fastball, because he crushes fastballs. And then the other off-speed pitches that were shown were just horrible expected numbers. And I feel like teams should take advantage of that. It's a pretty easy thing to look up. Savant's a thing that's used by MLB teams. And like Ellie, I was wrong on Ellie. I admitted that eventually. I wanted a little more time to pass before I said, okay, yeah, he's definitely not good. Because Ellie was having the great month, bad month great month, bad month, it seemed like, again, to start out the season this year. And I'm still going to be hesitant to take him, because mainly for two things. I don't want a speed first hitter early, and I want a good average. And I don't trust Ellie to provide a good average, even though he's so fast, but it's all right. I mean, some people like to build their team that way, and I get it. It's just that he has to make some more improvements still, I think, before I'll be down to draft him that early.
Yeah, like I took one share in my 302s, talked about that many times on my shows, but it's like a round three Ellie. And it's like, okay, yeah, like you said, now he's a top three pick Ellie. And that's a different ballgame. Now, given, you know, if everything clicks, the dude's off the charts, amazing, but there's a lot of avenues for differences where, quote unquote, safer plays in the first round, even though we saw nothing safe anymore. It does leave questions, like you said, you made a comment that I always laugh at, because like, if my dumb brain can look on StatCast or something and figure out these things, how is an MLB team still throwing fastballs, like stuff like that? Like how does that work? So you'd hope they'd figure that out. You'd also hope that Ellie's working on that this offseason. You'd hope the Reds see this as well, type situation. These are two things that can go both directions. But yeah, there's going to be interesting about young players. The old saying goes, when a young player gets called up, step one, can they hit a fastball? Step two, can they hit an off-speed pitch? Basically, it's a game changing back and forth. And that was a long step one, apparently, for Ellie. So we'll see how step two goes. But definitely something to keep in mind. Dude's a stud. Not taking anything away from the guy. But there's just his profile leads to potentials for lots of ups and downs. Still very young. Not even seen the highest up. So lots of ways to go there. Sixth on the list, talking about young players that just keeps going up, 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 up. I don't know how much higher he can go, but maybe he'll prove me wrong. That's Bobby Witt Jr. BABIP 354, sixth on the season, 332 batting average, 32 homers, 31 steals, 125 runs, 109 RBIs, MVP if there wasn't a guy named Aaron Judge. Like, amazing season from Bobby Witt Jr. Amazing start to the second half of the season for Bobby Witt Jr. But we kind of mentioned this thing on a previous show, the increase in the BABIP. We saw a lot of things go well. The strikeout rate dropped tremendously for Bobby Witt Jr., down to 15%. When you're looking at Bobby Witt's profile, still very young, I think we can agree dude's a top five fantasy player. Not taking that away from him. But what can we expect from this BABIP situation?
So oddly enough, Witt had a BABIP of 295 in his first two seasons, identical, and then jumped 60 points. And I definitely... So you would say that last year was the outlier, but considering the type of player he is, how fast he is, I think we should expect north of a 300 batting average for Witt going forward. So I don't think it's too fluky. I mean, him hitting 320 or whatever it was, 330 could be asking a lot. Maybe he's like a 300 hitter, which is perfectly fine. So I'm not too worried about a huge regression negatively for Witt. And also, as with everyone else you mentioned so far, hit so much red on the StatCast. So these guys are definitely earning their luck to some degree. It's just hopefully you want to see guys crushing the ball when they have a high BABIP. And yes,
100%.
That way it checks out. Otherwise, it might have some really big issues going into the next season potentially. And in terms of profile, that was postseason. So what was 37% ground ball rate, 44% fly ball rate, which is fine. He's taking advantage of his speed, 18.5% line drive rate. That's perfectly fine too, I believe. And yeah, it's just it's unfortunate if you took J-Rod over Witt this year, because they seemed like they were a toss-up, but as we know now after the season's over, that it was not a toss-up. But yeah, there's nothing. Funny enough, Witt also has 100th percentile sprint speed, so I guess he tied Ellie for the fastest runner. And yeah, I'd just like to see more steals from Witt. 30 was a little bit disappointing considering the season he had. It's kind of funny to say that, but hopefully he gets 50 again, and he'll probably be it should be him or Ohtani probably for a top pick, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair discussion. Some have Ellie in there, but I'd have Witt over Ellie as well, just because I feel like there's a safer floor. I hate saying that especially after this last year, where the first round was a disaster for most of the picks there. But yeah, Witt was awesome. These guys, like most of these guys, were coming off career years, so you'd expect some regression, but some of their regression is not going to be bad. Like, these guys are going to still be very, very good. And this could be Witt, actually. Like, a 30-30 dude seems like his profile. Maybe, like, there could be a 40-40 season in Bobby Witt Jr., which is pretty sweet. Maybe a lower batting average. So that's where the BABIP comes into play, but it could lead to overall better production elsewhere, which is also big in the Bobby Witt Jr. discussion. All right, we're going to go down a few picks here. Bobby went with six. We'll go to number nine on the board. We'll skip Connor Wong. We'll skip Brandon Marsh on the list. We'll go to O'Neill Cruz. BABIP of 347, hit 259 on the year, 21 homers, 22 steals. I was shocked when I saw he played 146 games recently on a shortstop review. Didn't think he played that many games. Still a 2020 season, decent batting average. I know people had higher expectations. Everyone's comparing him to Elly De La Cruz. But O'Neill Cruz was still very, very good, all things considered. Hits the ball very, very hard, which probably, like you said, correlates to the BABIP situation with the lower batting average. Another profile that's going to be a roller coaster potentially at times. But what's your thoughts when you look at Elly De La Cruz? Because, again, a dude crushes the baseball and just had a very, very high BABIP.
For sure, yeah. I'm naturally going to take the what everyone says is the cheap comparison route and look at him and versus Elly because it's so much fun to do. And so Cruz had a 1% better K rate. His was 30%. Basically the exact same batted ball profile. Elly had 46% ground ball rate. Cruz was 47.8. And then they're both in the 33% range for fly ball rate. Elly didn't swing outside the zone as much, but they both had sub 68% contact rates, which are, like I said, very bad. But this is where it switches up for O'Neill Cruz. Cruz had a 95.5 miles per hour average exit velocity versus Ellie's 91.8. 95.5 is very, that's got to be, I don't have the full player pool in front of me to compare it to, but that's got to be near the top. It's Savant has it right here in front of me. Yeah, he was 99th percentile O'Neill Cruz. That's very impressive. And then going along the list, O'Neill Cruz had a 15.7% barrel rate. He had on the list, O'Neill Cruz had the highest hard hit of all the guys we're talking about. His hard hit was 54.9%. And his XBA was 266 versus Ellie's 244. So just going off of this, if you were to cover up the names, you would probably take O'Neill Cruz over Elly going forward if you're going to look at these underlying numbers. O'Neill Cruz still has, like I mentioned, he has the poor K rate that's going to hold him back, but he's 80th percentile O'Neill sprint speed. So that's also why he's able to maintain the higher BABIP. And I mean, if he can hit 260-ish, but steal more, he's literally Elly Light. And I don't know what the ADP is yet, but I'm sure
to tell you it's all right, let's hear it. 36.
Oh, for O'Neill,
You're not gonna be. I was expecting to see like 70. No, it's 36. So you are not getting. You're basically getting closer to Ellie's price last year.
And O'Neill moved up last year a lot before anything even happened, and he didn't. I don't think he really delivered that price, but he's right back at it. So people are, all the crazies are still thinking that he's going to break out, and he's only 26.
O'Neill, which he could. I would not be shocked if he had back injuries. I think it was off and on, which is scary. I know Brian Hayes had major back injuries. Maybe it wasn't a back. Maybe it was a hip or a hamstring with O'Neill, and that's not still soft tissue. Doesn't make me feel great. But he did battle injuries this last year, still put up the 2020. Like, so there is room for growth. I'm not going to deny that. But yeah, I'm with you. It's like a lot of what ifs on these ones.
Yep.
Yeah, his uncle Ted said he cracked his ankle. Yeah, that's what it was. It was something crazy. Yeah.
And he's also moving to center field, yes. O'Neill. So that could make it easier for him. From playing baseball, outfield's easier than shortstop. So, that can only help him.
Yeah, he'll be shortstop outfield eligible too, which will be fun.
That is nice.
That'll be good as well. So fun stuff there. Like I'm much more inclined to probably take the O'Neill pick at 36 than Elly at 4.
100%.
So I might take those. Like I'm actually debating, like if I start an early draft and say you get an early pick, that might be some discussion, but we say 36 right now, Ben, when we talk in March, now we're probably saying 25 or maybe higher because that's how it works.
Right? He hits five homers in spring training, steals five bases. It's going to be through the roof.
It's the old joke. This is why idiots like me like to draft early because a lot of this stuff changes. And so get your shares now while you can type situations. Speaking of a guy that changed a lot last draft season, Jaren Duran. Jaren Duran finished 10th on the BABIP list at 345. Finished the season with a 285 batting average, 21 homers, 34 steals, 111 runs scored. Outstanding season overall, 160 games. But Ben, he played 102 games last year, had a 381 BABIP. Year before, 302. So this is in the middle of the two. Honestly, when I see stuff like that, maybe we're getting closer to who he is type situation. What's your thoughts when you look at Jaren Duran's profile? Because he's a guy that's kind of a mid second rounder, give or take, right now. I'll double check the ADP, but I know that's where people are talking about him.
Yeah, I could definitely buy into Duran's 345 BABIP as his norm while he stays as like athletic as he is right now. Like as he ages, of course, it'll get worse as he slows down. But Duran's sprint speed is 96th percentile, so that's definitely near the top. And his XBA was 280, hit 285, so nothing there seems out of line. And when you go to the ground ball, fly ball rate for Duran, he had a 46.6% ground ball rate, only 35% fly ball rate, which is good for someone with his speed. He had an 18% line drive rate, which is solid. And it's just, I mean, Duran's more, of course, like, so you, I think you read up stats. He was 21-34 homers to steals, and you expect more steals from Duran. The barrel rate was okay. It was 9.3%, or yeah, 9.3%, which is a little bit above league average. So the power, the 20 homers should play. It's, I mean, Fenway's hard though for lefty power, so he'll have to hit a lot of those on the road. As long as he hits 21 again, let me check to see what his expected numbers were for homers. So overall, he was expected for 21.8 homers. Duran hit 21, so that's pretty good. Actually, a little unlucky. And if he played all of his games in Fenway, he would have 21 homers. So I guess he earned that 21. And it's like the other parks are all in the 20s or high teens. So he seems, that seems like a pretty fair total he ended up with. But yeah, Duran's great. I'm worried he's maybe going a little too high now that I'm digging into his underlying numbers a little bit. I mean, I was in on Duran, but of course he's going like 120 picks later than he is now last year. It's just the hard hit isn't as high as the other guys on this list. It was 43.7%, which is still good, but it's a little bit compared to the other guys with the high BABIPs. It's definitely on the lower side. So definitely more looking into with Duran. It's just it was a no brainer last year where he was going. Now you really got to think about it a little bit more and maybe buy in on a bounce back guy instead or something. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, his ADP is 21 right now. Looking back for, it's got my ADP for some reason is showing the picks from my OC2 from last year on the right column. You guys know an FBC does that once in a while. I took Duran last year. I picked 140 in an OC, so that was fun. But yeah, he's 21. I'm a believer. I was actually, the big question going into last year is, could he provide the power type thing? Could he take that step in the power? Did all that, let off, plays great defense. Yeah, he's gonna be very, very good. I can get behind the early pick just because you're getting the power. I think he's a 20 home run guy with tons of speed, and the he'll get on base like in front of Devers and company. Story looked good. If he plays a full year, like, he should score another 100 plus runs. There's a lot to like, I think, with, like, this is honestly like a Mookie light almost, and you're getting him in the second round instead of the first round. Maybe more steals and less power, like switch those two, but runs scored, I guess, maybe not the RBIs, but so maybe I'm over saying it, but like I could see a potential avenue for that with Jaron Duran. Getting him a whole round later, essentially.
Yeah, and Uncle Ted mentioned in the chat he wanted all lefty hitters, so it made me think of Duran's. I would look at the splits because I remember there was a concern. Not, I didn't have concern with this, but others did. And last year, Duran had a 911 OPS versus righties. He had a 666 versus lefties. I mean, with Rafaela and all the other guys they have, I don't know, maybe Duran gets – I'm not saying he's going to get platooning. But, like, I'm not going to say anything like that, but he does have a split issue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he overcame it this last year. It's just something to keep in mind. And yeah, I'm not saying I'm not going to draft him in the second round in the 15er. It's just, so I need to do more digging before I can commit to that, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. They had a lot of platoons. They were like a Brady always platooned, and there was a handful of them. So it's almost like they didn't have enough options to get to Duran on that
one. He's the best one to stay in.
Yeah. So you're staying in, kid, type situation. Yeah. I think that might be the case again in 2025, but we'll see. We haven't even seen the free agent world start up yet. Still in World Series times. All right, number 11 on the list is one that you added to the table, and it's the fun one because he is playing in the World Series right now. And that is Teoscar Hernandez. He had a BABIP of 344 with a 272 batting average, 33 homers, 12 steals, just a monster season. 33 homers, the most in his career, 99 RBIs again. The batting average was great. Highest average since 2021. Really good stuff there. And he's always been a pretty good, like, this is in line with his career BABIP. So this is Teoscar, in my opinion. I don't have a whole lot else besides, like, this is Teoscar, but maybe you have more on this. So what's your thoughts on Teoscar Hernandez?
No, it's good that you pointed out because I had concern with Teoscar going into drafts in this season because of his high K rate. He struck out 31.1% of the time last year when he was in Seattle. And for his career, it's 29.6. for the Dodgers in 2024, it was only 28.8%. So it was lower than his career average in the year before. But so that concerned me. But now that I'm seeing how high it's been every year, like you pointed out, it's okay. It's how Teoscar is, but his XBA was 253, 20 points below his actual average. Let me see his swinging strike rate, because that's going to be pretty telling as well. It was, 16%. He did cut it, though, 2 percentage points from 2023. It was 17.8 for when he was with the Mariners, and this year it was 16.1%. So maybe that's a product of Seattle is hard to see or something. I know it's not a good place to hit, so that could make sense. But he's definitely, and also with Teoscar's age, maybe going into next year, I should be more worried about it than I was going into this year. But it's just the high K rate has always been concerning. He crushes the ball, decent amount of, not as much red as the other guys we've been talking about on his Savant page, but starting to see a little more. These guys come down to earth a little bit as we're getting away from the top. But the barrel rate's pretty elite, 94th percentile for Teoscar, and the X slug was 496, which is over 90th percentile as well. It's just he makes it work with, he doesn't have the best profile, but he gets the job done. And if he goes back to LA, maybe I'll be more interested in him. It really depends where he resigns ultimately, but definitely some things I'm worried about with him.
Yeah. Free agent. I'd imagine we see him heading back to LA. They got the funds and he's at the age where he's like, I just won one title. Maybe I'll take a discount and win another title type situation. This team's built for that for a while. Yes. I said that out loud. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's back in LA. I thought originally he'd go back to Arizona last year. That did not happen, but he's flourished. It is interesting though, you mentioned the XBA, and we know X stats aren't the end all be all, but I think they're great to utilize like you're using. And each and every year when his BABIP was still at this normal rate, XBA and batting average are pretty much in line every season, pretty close. This was like the first year you saw like a big drop off compared to previous seasons batting averages. So interesting in that regard, but still he also had more home runs than he's had in his career. There's a lot of different ways to analyze that situation. So good year for Teoscar. And I think you can expect a lot of at least 25 home runs type situation. And if he's in LA, runs and RBIs will come in bunches. All right, number 12 on the BABIP list. This one is fun. Now we're going to have some discussion to be had here. Ezekiel Tovar had a 344 BABIP, 269 average. Dude hit 26 home runs, which I don't think many of us saw coming. We expected more steals. Only had 6 steals, though. Everyone says Coors is great for BABIP. It is, but he also had a ton of power here. So what's your thoughts when you dig in on this Ezekiel Tovar? He was only 2022 this past year also, so a lot of potential growth could be had in Tovar. So when you look into his production, what do you see in there?
I see the worst profile of the names we have listed.
It's bad.
Yeah, so I told you before, we're going to have some fun talking about the list, and Tovar is one of the names why I said that. He had a 3.3% walk rate. He had a 28.8% K rate. So if we put that in terms of K minus walk, it was a 25.5. That's like an elite starter. And that's his Tovar. It's just so bad. His fly ball rate was way too high for how fast he is. It was 45.9% fly ball rate. His ground ball was 32.8. That's like Santander level splits. And his O swing was by far the worst. So he swung outside the zone almost half the time, 48.1%. His contact rate, so when he did make contact, regardless of where it was, only 69%. Not nice. His EV was only 88.8 miles per hour. His barrel rate was 9%, which is average, but I mean, it better be at least when he's hitting that many homers. His hard hit was one of the lowest of the guys we've talked about, less than 40%. His XBA was 235. His ex-WOBA was 289. And the other guys have been like 340 or higher. We had a couple 400s. This is all Coors driven for how well he did. And I if he doesn't steal, we've seen with McMahon and other guys like the court and even Nolan Jones, if you want to argue that from last year, it can mask a lot of issues. But I remember Tovar went pretty early, at least in your first draft. I don't know where he's gone in the other drafts. At least shortstop's relatively deep at the top. But I'm going to stay away from Tovar, I think, next year, just based on what I'm looking at right now.
ADP is 113 so far for Tovar. I was all in on him last year. I was very excited to see what we have. Like you said, I'll take what I can get and kind of run looking at that overall production because, the power is great. The average in the end didn't kill you. I was drafting him more for speed and stuff. That didn't pan out, all things considered. And looking at the overall grand scheme of it, like you mentioned, there's a lot of not great in that profile that leaves me quite concerned. But again, I try to take a step back. I'm always cautious. He's only going to be 23 next year.
Yeah.
So it's one of those like, hey, maybe he keeps the power but works on other things. And we see his whole other step forward, and ADP of 113 looks like a gift when all things are said and done. He's got to make a lot of improvements to make that claim to be more accurate, I think. But he could. He could. I'd just be very, very concerned, to say the least. All right. Coming up next, 14th on this list, we're going to skip J-Rod. And we're going to talk Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Mr. Ground Ball himself, had an amazing year. BABIP of 342 while hitting 323, best of his career this past year. 342 was also by far his best BABIP of his career. 30 homers, 103 RBIs, 98 runs scored. So by like his next closest BABIP was 313. So this was a massive bump for Vladito. Next closest batting average, 311 in that 313 season. So when you look at Vladimir Guerrero Jr., what are you seeing on this one?
I think he finally got good luck because you mentioned how it was his highest BABIP. It's also been one of his highest, well, of course, one of his highest averages. So actually it was his highest average of his career, 323. Identical to his XBA, so that's always interesting. He also had the 100th percentile XBA last year. Vlad is back to being as much, I think he has the most right of anybody because his K rate is so good and the whiff rate is so good, where a lot of the other guys were just more, whenever they hit it, the ball was crushed, but they had some K issues. Vlad is the opposite. Like, he's very unique so far. He's not very fast, so he only had 45th percentile sprint speed, which is interesting, but he hits so many ground balls that if they go through, when he hits them so hard, they're going to be singles. So I think it's interesting. He's always been a weird profile. Everyone's always been trying to crack the code on when's he going to break out. And his XBA. So I mentioned how it was his highest average. Cause he hit 277 in 2023, 289. No, those are his BABIP, excuse me. So they were pretty low. And then in 2023, his average is 264, 274, 2022. And his XBA was always much higher. It was 299 in 2023, 281 in 2022. And oddly enough, it was 311 the year he hit 311. So that's really weird. Those two best years, the XBA matched his actual average. Of course, Vlad could regress to be like in the middle of those 2022, 2023 seasons and then last year. But I mean, as long as he hits for the 30 homers and then 100 and 100 and then hits 300, just give that, that's – it's essentially what Corey Seager is, and Corey is always a round two pick, early round two, at least in 15s. And I think Vlad is, he should return that value. He's only going to be 26 still, which is kind of crazy. Yeah. And he's kind of a unicorn when it comes to his profile. I feel like him and Yordan are very similar, but they're two of the elite hitters, and that explains why.
Yeah, no, I'm starting to, you know, I still think there's going to be the ups and down years like we've seen with Vlad so far, but I'm at least taking my comments back a little bit on him. Like, this guy's really, really good. It's just, I don't know if he's got the 40-plus. Like, Yordan, at least we can see it in 40-plus home runs. Like, right. You can all visualize it. Where Vlad doesn't, where you're paying for Vlad, it's like, okay, if he hits for the elite average, it's well worth it. If he's back down to, like, 270, 280, now we're sitting there going 280 with 25 homers. You can get that a lot of places, or closer to it, maybe not 280, but you know what I'm trying to say. It's a different profile. It's always been my bugaboo with drafting him so much. But you look at him, ADP is 17. If you like him, you got to go get him right now. He's actually going one pick ahead of Yordan Alvarez right now. So there's a great comp you made on that one. All right, now we go to it took long enough on this show. You know, right now we're about 40 minutes into this show and we're about to talk about a catcher, okay? It's about time on Bench with Bubba. And the 15th high BABIP on the season was the one, the only, Yainer Diaz. Had a BABIP of 336 on the season with a 299 batting average, which is outstanding, 16 homers, 84 RBIs. So much higher BABIP from last year. A bump in batting average, but not like the same, you know, differences, all things considered. Quality of contact, barrel rate dropped tremendously this past year. So when you dig in on, there's other things that I'm not going to take away all the talking points here because, man, there's a lot on the profile that changed with Yainer Diaz. So when you're looking at Yainer, this you can take this two ways. You can be concerned and think, okay, this is more who he is, or there's improvements that could be made back in the other direction. So when you look at Yainer Diaz, what are you thinking here?
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of digging into, I'm sure. And the, of course, I have to mention that this is one of the players you put on the list. So, of course, Bubba put on his catcher.
Hey, we'll talk about another catcher I did not put on the list. Just to clarify.
Oh, fair. Right, yes, I didn't think about that when I added him to the list. so when I put all the names down on my spreadsheet and the stats that I have been talking about were pulled up, the one thing that's up for Yiner that's very concerning, and I mentioned it with Tovar, is his chase rate. So, and this is an issue with Yiner last year as well. So in 2024, Diaz had a 45.7% O swing. And in 2023, it was 46.4. So it's definitely been an issue for him. It improves by like a percentage point, which, okay, take that for what you will. But I know Michael Harris has had this issue. He's kind of been able to combat it, Harris, by just making contact all the time. And we view Harris as an average asset. So the next highest, interestingly enough, which I'll kind of bury the lead a little bit, or not bury the lead, but spoil it, is Altuve was the next highest, Jose Altuve, with a 39.6% O-swing. I think he's always had an elevated O-swing, Altuve, so it is possible to overcome that if you hit the ball well enough. And with Diaz, his Statcast is fair. So his XBA was 300, which is only a point off from his actual average. Let's see what his batted ball profile looks like. Diaz had a 22% line drive rate, so that explains why the average and the BABIP were elevated. Also a 51% ground ball rate, which is not good. That's why he had fewer homers and more at bats this year, 23-16. So he lost 7 homers based on 2023's total, and he had over 200 more plate appearances, so that's concerning. He was still valuable because of how bad the catcher position was, but people were hoping for 20 and 300. Didn't quite get there. When he did that in less than 400 plate appearances, I mean, that's why Yiner was like in a tier of his own in drafts. He was going around pick 100, and everyone else the post him was going much later. So I don't know. Diaz is only this is age 25 season, so like he could easily improve next year. And the way the catcher is, like he had 619 plate appearances this past season, and that playing time with the batted ball skills, even though he chases a lot, I'll still be in on Diaz. It's just he didn't take all the steps that we were hoping for, and hopefully he can kind of right the ship next year, so to speak.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. And he had that weird start to the year, like it was 200 in May, and then it went to 363, 327, 304, 303. He basically had 4 straight months of hitting over 300, which was pretty sweet. 319 in the second half compared to 284 in the first half. Power was pretty similar. But I looked you go down, some other stats here. We're talking BABIP, 314 BABIP in the first half, 372 in the second half. Lot of positives to look at this, like, at the same time. Like, he struck out 5% more in the second half of the season. So he was more aggressive, potentially, going to your O-swing comment. But it could be because that's not showing up here on the splits tool. I'd have to get in a deeper splits thing to start seeing that kind of stuff, because his ground ball rate's almost the same, all that good stuff. But we did see a much better Yiner in the second half. He's also playing a lot more first base. They had him, Caratini was catching a lot. He was playing very well. And then they had basically Caratini and Yiner were playing first and catcher, getting days off playing the other positions, which does help with the legs because we see a lot of catchers die off as the season goes on. There's a lot of questions with Yiner. I think he's still going to be a stud. I think he's still a top five fantasy catcher. It's just, can you revert back to the guy we saw in 2023? More power. I'll take a lower batting average for more power for out of him. Or is he this kind of like, hey, we're going to BABIP it to death, hit close to 300, power's limited. Still going to be a very good Houston offense because you hope Tucker plays all year. Yordan's there. Altuve's there. I think they re-signed Bregman. I think it just makes sense for that. So they should still have a good offense around Yiner. And I think that's positive as well. But like you said, he's young, lots of questions, and catchers have a ton of volatility. Trust me. Well aware of this one, just because that the bumps and bruises they take back there aren't always reported, folks. And those guys will play through almost anything compared to other positions. And you just kind of hope and pray that they can stay good to go in that regard. All right, you mentioned it a second ago. His teammate Jose Altuve finished 17th. Yiner is 15th. Brandon Rogers 16th. Jose Altuve was 17th. I want to bring Altuve up because dude had a great season. Been talked about a lot of places. He had a 337 BABIP, hit 295, 20 homers, 22 steals. You know, 348 BABIP last year, 315 the year before. Previously in his career, a high BABIP guy, had a little lull in the middle there. What's your thoughts on Altuve, though? I think more importantly, he's going to be 35 this year, which is always a concern. But it's another just really, really solid season with a high BABIP and a guy got the job done at the plate.
Yeah, Altuve is he's a very weird profile when you look at him. Let me pull it back up. So I mentioned his poor chase rate, Altuve's. He also had the lowest exit velocity of anyone on our list, 86.5% miles per hour. He had the lowest barrel rate of 6.5%, and his hard hit was only 31%. His XBA, so this is where I want to go next. Last year, Altuve's XBA was 264, but I'm going to read off the previous five seasons beyond that. So in 2023, it was 245, then 269, 262 in 2021, 230 in 2020, 268 in 2019. So he hasn't been above a 270 XBA since 2018. And that's like almost the start of his career. But since in that time, though, his average has been 295, 311, 300, 278. The 219 was fluky in 2020, but then 298 and then 316 in 2018. So he's been able to outperform his expected stats for the longest time, despite not like having some of the worst batted ball data you could possibly have. So the next thing that I got to look at is the distribution. Let's see, the ground ball rate was actually lower this year. It was only 41.9%, but his line drive rate was 24.6. So it's weird that the XBA doesn't like the line drive rate, but also XBA accounts for K rate. I mean, he only struck out 17% of the time, Altuve, so that shouldn't really bring it down. It's just maybe it's just that the StatCast doesn't like his profile, even though he makes it work. And he mentioned his age. He's going to be 35 next year. And second base is horrible from what I've been hearing in recap shows, yours and Ryan's included. So it's tricky. It's just I haven't really drafted much Altuve over the years. It's not a Yankee bias, trust me. But it's looking at stuff like this, it always gets me questioning, okay, is this going to be the year where he finally falls off? It's just it's tricky. And that's why we're looking at these guys, because the high BABIP always leads to – or low BABIP always leads to good debates, I think.
Yeah, no, and that's Altuve with me. It's like I know the dude's good. It's, for me, it's an age thing, and I try not to be ageist, but it's like – look at Arenado right now. Look at Goldschmidt right now. Eventually, Nelson Cruz. Like, he lasted longer than most. Ozuna's getting there. Like, there's a lot of guys, like, I kind of try to want to get out on before the drop-off happens. There's so many good young players. To my detriment at times, like, this last year, here was his last year, the year before, Altuve was so cheap in drafts. Like, everyone was off of him, and he balled out. I think he had to pay a little more this past year. But it's like, we're looking at this dude. Continues to get it done. No denying that. There are holes. ADP 62. That's like the 3-4 turn, like early fourth round, like in a 15. You have to trust Altuve if you're taking him there. Let's put it that way. And I'm not saying it's a bad pick right now. It's only October 29th as we're talking. A lot can change in our analysis, but just early thoughts, all things considered, there's a lot going on with Jose Altuve. And again, good team format though, so that does help. All right, we're dropped down to 24th now. We're gonna skip a catcher and some other guys here. And we're going to see Ohtani because he's, you know, a unicorn. He only had a 336 BABIP, you know, kind of weak when you have Aaron Judge up there. But 24th on the list, Riley Green, a guy that's been coming up in a lot of conversations lately. BABIP of 329, but a 262 batting average. Got the 24 homers, 4 steals in 137 games. In 99 games last year in 2023, Ben, he had a 384 BABIP. In 93 games in 2022, he had a 354 BABIP. So this is actually his lowest BABIP out of his three seasons in baseball, which is interesting. We're talking high BABIP guys. He saw his quality of contact metrics get higher. I think Riley Green is an absolute stud. He will be 24, he turned 24 in September. So I love what we're seeing from Green, but how do we use this BABIP to kind of get a better idea of who Riley Green is?
Well, you read his average, which was only 262, but then, so the high BABIP, low average, of course, his K rate was 26.7, which is a little high. But it has gone down all 3 years. It went from 28.7 to 27.4 to 26.7 in 2024. So that's good that Riley's lowering his K rate. His swinging strike rate is only 11%. It dropped last year from last year as well. So that's good. His XBA was only 258. It was 289 the previous year and 246 the year before that. There's a lot of red though. Really, the XBA is the only thing that isn't above 80th percentile of the main batted ball metrics on Baseball Savant. It's just that the K rate is 20th percentile, like I mentioned, excuse me, and that's why the XBA is a little bit lower. So if he can just keep improving on that K rate, and if he keeps a high BABIP, he could be a really good average hitter like he was last year in 2023 when he had 288. And the one thing I think we talked about Green in the projection recap or something, but was thinking that he should steal bases. He only had 59 percentile sprint speed. So not the fastest guy to keep a high BABIP. Maybe that's why the BABIP did drop compared to the previous two seasons, because I thought he had higher sprint speed. And the 59 percentile kind of supports that it's not the highest. But he's only 24 still, which is crazy because it's going to be his fourth year. And I don't – like ADP always comes into play, but I was into Green early last year in drafts. Only got him on one team. But if the price is right and I don't need speed, I would definitely be – interested in taking him, drafting him again, because I could see him hitting 280, 290 with good RBIs and runs and just maybe lacking in steals, but you can always make that up somewhere else.
ADP 86 right now. So you gotta have to like some real. A lot of these guys are getting bumps. Maybe it's because they had these big years. That could be something to do with it here. But
I would take Brian Reynolds over him because I know Brian's going after Riley Green. There's kind of similar profiles, but Reynolds steals more, I think.
Yeah, Reynolds 98, so 12 picks later. Yep, there you go.
That's interesting that he went ahead.
Seiya Suzuki at 100. Is that, no?
Maybe. Reynolds and Seiya are like identical players.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting profile between the two of them. And they go right next to each other. Go figure.
Yep.
So that makes it fun as well. A couple more to go here. A guy that is just, and he's on a team I watch religiously, and I don't even know what to expect going into 2025. And that's Elliot Ramos, who finished 25th on this list. A BABIP of 329, hit 269, 22 homers on the year. Strikeout rate was 26%. As he had small samples before, but 26% seems decent for what we saw from the 24-year-old Ramos, who turned 25 in September. You know, the quality of contact was great. I am a huge fan of Elliot. Many people know that, obviously. It's also, hey, first season, what are we going to get going forward? He seemed like every time he'd get in a slump, he'd bust out of it type thing. So I liked the way he looked all season. He's going to get all the run in the world next year, barring something insane happening. But when you look at his profile, you look at his BABIP and everything, what stands out to you with Ramos? Because, again, we're going off basically one season. We don't know too much else about this guy.
Right. He's tough to nail down, Ramos. And I did have him in a couple teams last year. So I appreciate you also supporting that ad. I forget how it worked out, but
Ramos I remember over Matos. Everyone wanted Matos.
Yeah, so yeah, everyone wanted those 11 RBIs they couldn't add to their team. Exactly. Is all in the past. And yeah, Ramos was definitely the way to go. So with Ramos, the K rate is a little bit high. And he started out so on fire. I remember I cut Ramos on a team when I think it was Conforto was going to come back or something like that. And I saw how high his BABIP was, Ramos's. And I got, okay, I'm like, well, he's going to regress a little bit because he can't have a 400 BABIP the rest of the season. And of course it came down. They said it was like 329 or whatever it was. And the other thing is, of course, if you look at his month by month splits in August and September, Ramos had a 749 OPS, 669 versus May was 770. June, where he was really on fire, was 952. And July was 791, so not too far off from August, but he definitely declined each month in terms of OPS. And the K rate was like he had 33 Ks in August, so that's roughly like a 33% rate. He had 97 at bats. And the other thing, I have Ramos in my, I have a simulate, like a sim team, and I was looking at his splits because it's very important in like in a computer simulation league. And he's very bad versus righties. Ramos had a 679 OPS versus them this year versus an 1193 OPS versus lefties. And the Giants love the platoon, as you know. So that's a little concerning. But like you mentioned, the batted ball quality is great. That's why he was able to have a high BABIP despite the poor K rate. And the XBA was only 253. So he was about 16 points higher. He had 269. So he was a little fortunate definitely with the average. But really the only thing is he declined as the year went on, and the split is an issue for me potentially. But yeah, I don't know. It also depends, like I said, with everyone else, it depends on ADP, but Ramos definitely has promise. He's only 25. It's just that there's just some things where if the price is too high, I may pass up on him next year.
I don't think it's too high right now. 196.
I would take the risk there, I think.
Yes, that seems like that's outfielder 4, maybe 5 on some teams. Like, depends on how you draft.
Yep.
That's well worth – the juice is worth the squeeze on that one, in my opinion.
Agreed. Yeah. I was kind of negative, but I don't know. With how high Green was, I wasn't sure.
Well, the thing is he's young, so it's one of those, like, okay, if he improves on things, like, he's probably in – playing in the Dominican League or Mexican League, or there's like four or five different Latin winter leagues. He's probably playing in one of those right now, I'd imagine. So that could help him a ton. And it's like, he's still young. If he's 24, does he take the jump to, I think there's 30 plus home runs in that bat, like for reals. So it's just a matter of, can he get comfortable? Like you said, can he, maybe he's wearing down this year. Maybe like some of these guys just aren't conditioned for a full season. Like there's a million excuses I can give you. This could be who he is too. There's a lot of those concerns. Maybe it's like you said, is Ellie wasn't getting off speed pitches. Maybe they started changing the profile on Elliott and he started, because I was watching a lot of his later at bats. He's almost too patient at the plate. I'd have to look at his month to month like breakdowns. He was walking a ton towards the end. And I'd watch a lot of his at bats go to like full counts and he'd strike out, he'd walk, like a lot of that kind of stuff too. So there's a lot with a young kid like Ramos.
I will say real quick, he was a little unlucky with his homers. He was expected for 25 on Zavon. He only had 22. So
welcome to San Francisco, everybody.
Yeah.
Yes, that's why big time free agents don't want to sign, even though my theory is there's no ballpark holding Aaron Judge back. So I don't want to hear that excuse. Yep. That kind of
stuff. For Yankee Stadium right now, apparently.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's true. Almost any postseason stadium. Let's do the math. all right. 27th on the list. Second catcher added by Ben this time, just to clarify that one. JT Realmuto. And this is a fun one because what a bummer of a season for JTR. 266 average, 14 homers, 2 steals. You expect a lot more steals given. He played 99 games. He had the knee injury and other injuries, so that really curtailed his season, but he still had the 328 BABIP, Ben, and that's the highest BABIP since 2016, I believe, if I'm reading this correctly, for JTR. So when you're looking at Realmuto, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, his average was 266, so right in line with his 272 career average. His XBA was 273, so all in the same ballpark. It's just that, I think you mentioned before we recorded that he was catcher 12, but it's just a product of how poor the position was. Yep. And you mentioned the injuries. He's going to be 34 next year, I believe. I'm sure the ADP is pretty high. It's because of his name value. And the sprint speed's still there, 79th percentile. So he could, in theory, run a decently high BABIP still if he continues to run that quickly. I mean, it depends on how the knee recovery goes. He did come back at the end of the year, but I think it could linger depending on what the injury was. His K rate was a little bit higher last couple of years. Realmuto had a 25.6% K rate in 2023. In 2024, it was 24.7, so a little bit lower, but definitely above his career high or career average, excuse me. And I just think he's probably gonna get overdrafted. I thought he was this past year. I didn't draft him any teams. I wanted the other younger studs like William, and I didn't draft him or Adley, but I preferred them well above Adley, JTR. And it's just, I think eventually, I mean, he's an old catcher for the position, and I don't know how much longer he can keep having a high BABIP, or at least one that's higher. But I don't know. Wait and see what happens with drafts.
Yeah. I was anti JT. I'm usually anti JTR, even with my former co-host Bat Flip, who loves JTR. That was a constant discussion point on many of our shows, but, and he paid off many years for Toby. There's no denying that whatsoever, but I think at a 33-year-old catcher, I think Salvi's one of the few that keeps things going because he plays first base and everywhere else. JTR just can't stay healthy right now. And that they're catcher injuries, man. This is why I say, like, they're just going to get the weirdest ones, and eventually – and he tried to play through it for a little bit too, which did not help. So you got to throw those things in there. ADP of 126 for JTR, so that's falling back more than usual. Still not on my radar, but something else to keep in mind. All right, two more bats to discuss here, two more young guns, some fun ones here. One player I picked up on many fab targets, and I had him actually in some DCs as well, and that is the 30th BABIP player on the board, Mark Vientos. BABIP at 324, finished with a 266 batting average, 27 home runs in the season. Then we saw the monster postseason where he had 5 more home runs in 13 games. But he basically got locked into the position after Brett Beatty went bye-bye. And Vientos had a great year. There are small samples previously, but much higher BABIP than years prior. The power numbers, like the barrels, the hard hits, are just insane from this man. Not to mention his, like, just an overall just home run to fly ball does not seem sustainable, but I'll let you dig into some of those numbers. What's your thoughts when you see Mark Vientos, young player? We've been waiting for the playing time. He took advantage of it. Like I handed home run to fly ball near 27%. That ain't going to stay. I don't care who you are. That's just reality. What else stands out to you in Vientos' profile, who I think is still very good, but he might be getting overhyped probably right now?
Yeah, and Uncle Ted was talking in the chat about what really affects BABIP, and I'm glad you point out the homer to the fly ball, because if that drops, those homers turn into outs, and that's how the BABIP goes down, because those are more balls technically in play now. So if he regresses to 20%, which is still very high,
yes.
I think it's higher than Vlad's. Vlad's was like in the teens, and he needs a high homer to fly ball to hit 30 homers. Vientos could have a big drop and a big power outage. And the other thing too, like you mentioned, he is young. He was only 24 this year, but his K rate was almost 3%, which is not good. And that explains the 60 point difference in his average and his BABIP. So I don't know, like his XBA was 248, which is okay, but it was roughly 20 points higher than his actual average. So I could see him hitting below 250 next year, probably, especially with the K rate that high. And he's not very fast. Vientos only has a 22nd percentile sprint speed. So you're talking a higher BABIP and low sprint speed, a lot of strikeouts. I feel like he was very lucky to hit 266. He did, though, I will give him credit. He had, a pretty good line drive rate. It was 19.8%, so almost 20%. And 20% is usually pretty good. And then anything higher than that is really good. But it's also, it's one season. We don't really know what his baseline skills are yet, but I mean, his barrel rate was excellent. It was 14.1% for Vientos, 92nd percentile. So like with a lot of the other guys, when he did hit the ball, he really crushed it. It's just a lot of swing and miss. And I know I've heard other people say that's their biggest issue with Vientos. And I mean, if you have a pretty good average floor and you need some power, I think he's a solid play. It's just that, like you mentioned with the homer to fly ball rate, it could really drop down. But also he had 27 in like two-thirds of the season. If he plays all year, any six, I know people have said he could probably get sent down, but if he plays a full year next year, I think he could hit 30 plus, and but he might hurt your average a little bit.
He'd have to be really, really bad to get sent down. I think a kid's a stud. Yes. I brought this up while you're talking. So Mark Vientos had that 26.5% home run to fly ball. Easy quiz, hot shot. Who do you think had the two higher ones?
Judge and Otani.
Yes. Judge had 32.2%, Shohei had 28%, then Vientos third in all of baseball with at least 400 plate appearances at 26.5, followed by Tyler O'Neill, Ketel Marte at 4 and 5. So that just goes to show you there's only 16 players with a 20% or higher home run to fly ball, and Vientos was number 3. So, like, he fully, fully embraced the whole approach of the play, let's put it that way. All right, the final player we're talking about here, and Ben added him, I think is the fun one to discuss. That is one Jackson Churio. He's 39th on the list. You have to go to page 2 for this one. 320 BABIP, 275 batting average, 21 homers, 22 steals. We all know the slow start to the year Jackson Churio had. Almost, he started to get platooned for a second. Then he proved to everybody, hey, I'm awesome, and I'm 20, and I'm still going to outplay all of you old folks out here. And he had a great second half of the season. And now he's a second-round pick in fantasy baseball. What's your thoughts if you look at this Jackson Churio profile? Because, again, started out extremely slow, and like second half, man, my goodness. If you look at the second half, first half BABIP splits, that's quite telling as well. So what's your thoughts on Churio?
Yeah, I really just wanted to deep dive Churio because I was completely out on him last year and seeing him relatively high. I'm like, okay, we can talk about him. He had a 278 XBA, so only 3 points higher than his actual average with 275. So he earned his average. He's pretty fast, of course, 97th percentile sprint speed. Churio's line drive rate was 20%, a 48.3% ground ball rate, which is good when you're that fast. It kind of hurts the power because he only had a 31% fly ball rate. But I think really what I'm trying to get is I could see him having like a 340 BABIP, and then he's like a 300 hitter potentially. And I'm sure it's probably like that in the second half because his first 2 months were just so terrible. I don't have to look up at his splits. I just remember looking at him in the past, and he was like under 200 for both months. And so he had 278 to mask how bad he was to start the season. And I know he's going really early in drafts, but he could be like a 25-25. He has the speed to go like 25-40 with a 300 average and then tons of runs and RBIs to go along with it. It's just that like he's 20 doing this. It's pretty crazy. And so he had a high BABIP. I just think it could be higher, honestly, next year and for the next few years.
Well, yeah, I just want to hit on it. Like you were mentioning, just his first half, second half splits alone. Babbitt was 349 in the second half compared to 291 in the first half. Like, I think that second half player, like you're talking about, is the dude that he is, and maybe even better. Again, he's 20 years old. 20 years old is just nuts. So ADP of 21 right now, and I think he's every bit worth it. I wouldn't be shocked if come March we see him in the first round. Honestly, this kid is the – I said on, I believe, the outfield preview last week with Ryan, review, I mean. I called him the next Ronald Acuna. Like, he could have a Ronald Acuna-type season. Like, there's no reason he shouldn't. Number one overall prospect at one point in time. This dude's a freak. And we finally got to see this last year. So, like, and it's kudos that he finished 39th after that slow start. That's how good he is at the position. So I'm glad you brought him up. I think there's a lot to enjoy about what we saw, because I keep, you know, Shohei's a unicorn. I don't think we're going to see a lot of 20-year-olds do what we saw last year. Like, it was just not – like, Ken Griffey's like the last one that comes to mind. I think he was straight out of high school or something when he came up and did what he did. So it doesn't happen every day. All right, Ben, that was fun. Wrapped. You went through, heck, almost 15 players or so, give or take. That was good. And I got one listener question on the old Twitter bot for us here. Robbie Lester says, there's no baseball offseason in my world. Thanks for keeping the content coming. In 2019, Yoan Moncada hit 315 with a 406 BABIP. I remember that was discussed often. Lesson learned the hard way at 225 the following season. Who was 2019's Moncada this season? So if we're talking high BABIP players this past year, who do you think takes the biggest hit out of these high BABIP players?
All right, so I lowered the minimum playing time to 350 plate appearances. Didn't see a big difference at the top of the list. So I'm going to go with someone who you glanced over, okay, and he's still here, and that's Brandon Marsh. He's kind of comparable player to Moncada. The BABIP's nowhere near as high as 348, but Marsh had a 32% K rate this year, and that his BABIP helped him hit not even 250, despite being that high. So I wouldn't count on Marsh to being too good next year. I don't know. What do you think?
That's very fair. Like, if you want to go that strikeout rate angle, I just look at it and I lowered it to 350. And a name that popped up is Josh Lowe, near 32% K rate, 338 BABIP, only hit 241. And he was always platooning too, so that could be a nasty one. But one for me that stands out, and he didn't strike out a ton this past, just on his profile, so I probably shouldn't throw him out there. I want to say Carlos Correa. He hit 310 this last year, hit with a 343 BABIP. Doesn't strike out a ton, but that's a dude I could see just like – he's got that continuous floor. But it just takes one injury for Carlos, and all of a sudden he's probably a 250 guy. And what if he starts – you know, he doesn't strike out, but what if he goes a 20% K rate? That could get interesting with Correa. Uncle Ted says Ozuna. I think that's a fair one to look at as well on the list. But I like your Brandon Marsh. Brandon Marsh is one, and heck, who knows if he even plays every day. He might platoon here pretty soon in that situation in Philadelphia.
I mean, it could just be Rooker too, though, because he was third highest. That's and fair. He has the massive K rate. So, but he has more power than Moncada. He's a better hitter than Moncada, but it has the high K rate and the high BABIP. So
on paper, it probably is Rooker to lose the batting average, but I still think he hits close to 40 home runs. So
he'll be valuable. Yeah. Still where Moncada wasn't.
Moncada has disappeared everywhere. That was the downside there. So, if you wanted to have fun with people and you want to tilt the world, you say it's Ellie De La Cruz. But
it crossed my mind. I was looking at the list again.
If you want to start pissing people off late October, you can start throwing those zingers out there and see where it heads. But all right, we're going to wrap it up there, my friends. Any final thoughts? We've done low BABIPs, we've done high BABIPs, starting to creep into more 2025 talk here pretty soon as World Series might be ending tonight.
Well, I hope not. I mean, it's I think a first time World Series come back from 3-0 for it to not be over for the Yankees, but we'll see what happens. And yeah, it was fun going through with these players. Definitely beneficial, like I said, with Cheerio and some of the other guys where I'm kind of hesitant on, but you're a little more optimistic. So it's always good to challenge your thoughts on on these players if you have a preconceived notion.
Yeah, I'm always pretty optimistic, or at least cautiously optimistic with the young players. Like, I give them a couple years to prove me wrong. Like, I might not go in all in on them, but at least I'm not writing them off for a lot of people. And I get it, because I'm also like the guy, I sit there and, well, Vlad's got to prove it to me type thing. So I'm kind of, pick your poison arguments. I get it, Bubba. You're one hand this way, one hand this way. But when it just comes to young players in general, if they got the quote unquote favorite word pedigree, I'll give them a few shots. But like Ramos, I want to hear all people's inputs on Ramos because I know I have bias involved there. So I need people to. I can't wait to sit down with like James Anderson this weekend in Arizona and be like, hey, because I'll never forget a couple years ago, home run derby behind home plate. We're watching, and James is sitting right next to me. I go, James, shoot me straight. Because about 4 or 5 years ago, the Giants had the best prospects in baseball that declined. I said, James, how bad is it? He's all, one of the worst in baseball. I'm like, thank you. That's great to hear. So,
I remember that story.
Yeah, I still remember it very vividly, as you can tell, and because it hit hard, so hard. At least Ramos made a comeback because he was starting to get written off there for a while, and we'll see if Matos or any of these slums can get it together. But that'll be another show for another day. But we'll wrap it up there. Thanks as always, Ben. We'll do it again sometime next week. We'll have to see with my schedule coming back from Arizona, but we'll figure something out. Until next time, make sure you check out Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm Matt Beatty-Intrick, and this was Bench with Bubba, episode 695. Catch you all next time.